Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for coming to learn a little bit on a holiday weekend. I think it's obviously a very important thing. It really says a lot about where our heart is when we're working. When we have some time off from work, we add extra learning into our schedule. I think I mentioned this last time we had a holiday weekend shiur, that I once had the frightening zuchus of introducing Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, the Mir Rosh Shiva, to give a shiur in Shari Tefillah on a holiday weekend. The rabbi wasn't around. He asked me if I could introduce him. I don't remember the shiur, but I remember he started by saying that, you know, we really have a chiv Talmud Torah all the time, every moment of every day. Elamai, we have to eat and we have to sleep and we have to work and we have so many responsibilities. But we go Blachar Me'ev Esm Shana, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, why weren't you learning all the time? And we'll say, well, I was so busy doing other things. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, yeah, and what about Thanksgiving morning? You know, what about when you weren't busy doing other things? So that's ultimately going to be the test, whether we have a reasonable excuse or not. So I want to thank Joey and the rest of the members of the board for pushing this idea and for making sure that these kinds of things happen in our shul. We did have a little bit of a debate as to what the topic should be, meaning whether it should be more of a feel-good, hashkafa, everyone needs to be uplifted, or, you know, is that sort of what I do at the drasha every Shabbos anyway, although sometimes I just make people feel bad at the drasha every Shabbos. So there was a little bit of a debate about that. So I thought we'll do a little bit, or should we do lumdis? Should we do I thought what we'd do is some combination of the two. I was asked recently by a group in some other country, I don't remember which, to give a shiur about Rav Schechter's Derech HaPsak. I reminded them that Rav Schechter is alive, and he can give a shiur about his Derech HaPsak. But it got me thinking at least about Rav Schechter's Derech HaPsak. And one of the things that stands out about my Rebbe's style of learning and style of psak is that everything, kol ha-Torah kula is inyan echad, it's all connected. His hashkafa is not different than his halacha, and his lamdus is not different than his halacha. He gives piskei halacha based on the lamdus that he came up with, that he's just convinced is emes la'amito, and he'll paskin like that. You know, he has a distinction between gzeiros rabbanan and malachas rabbanan, that he paskins serious shailas based on that lamdus. He has and hashkafa also. A lot of his hashkafa is just based on very straightforward. Forward halacha. So I think the one piece that represents this fusion of hashkafa and halacha, and a little bit of lamdus also, more than any other piece, it's one of my favorite pieces in all of his svarim, is in the sefer Be'ikvei Hatzon in Siman Lamed Beis. Be'ikvei Hatzon is Rav Schechter's second sefer. His first sefer is Eretz HaTzvi. It starts with an aleph. Be'ikvei Hatzon starts with a beis. His third sefer is Ginas Egos, starts with a gimel. So he did that on purpose, that they're going in order. So in his second sefer Be'ikvei Hatzon, he has a piece called Begidrei HaMedina Umelchamoseha, to understand the geder of Medinas Yisrael and the Melchamos that it fights, that the Medina fights. And, I used to do this all the time in DRS around Yom HaTzmut time. I would talk to the boys about, you know, what do you believe about Eretz Yisrael? What do you believe about Medinas Yisrael? And most of them had no clue what they believed, meaning they knew that they were generally Zionistic. They just thought that meant they were less frum than their more yeshivish counterparts. They didn't realize that this is also a view based on Torah, based on a very, very deep understanding of the Torah Kedosha. And it's not similar to, I thought one of the, I'm not going to talk about the rally, but it was a frum thing to do, to go to the rally. It was not a less frum thing to do, meaning it was a mitzvah. So if it's a mitzvah to go and help the Medina in any way that you can, and help in the war effort any way that you can, we have to realize that it's a mitzvah. But part of realizing that it's a mitzvah, and part of realizing that it's part of being a religious Jew, and that it's the best part of our Judaism that's coming out, is to realize that it's based in Torah, and to see the Torah that it's based on. So in a certain sense, the piece I'm going to share with you is a little bit dated, but there are elements of it that are more nogea now than they were when it was written. I mean, this was written at a time where the big topic of discussion was land for peace, when there was such a hava mina, that if only we give up Yehuda v'Shomron, and we give up Aza, and we give up everything, then we'll have peace. that there was such a Hava Amina. And there were people, serious people, serious Talmid Chacham also, that, and serious Gedolim, that thought that, yeah, Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Kala Tarukula, and therefore, if the Arabs tell you that if you give them half the land, then you can have peace and they'll stop killing us all the time. So then that's what you have to do. You have to give up half the land because Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Kala Tarukula. So this piece Rav Shechter wrote to try to explain why that's a bad idea, not only because it's not true, meaning that's obvious, meaning if it's not true and you give up half the land and then you're not going to get peace, you're just going to get more killing and more death and it's going to be a bigger Pikuach Nefesh. So then it's obviously incorrect. And I think history has proven that's, any time we've given anything, all we got is more killing and more death, but even it, Lu Yitzuyur, if it were true, even though Pikuach Nefesh Docha Kala Tarukula, it would not apply in this case. So it's a wide ranging piece. I don't know how far we'll get. I don't know how long I'm supposed to go for. We can go for a while with this piece. It's a pretty, and I want to leave off with some separate Dvar Hashkafa that's not in this piece as well. But maybe we'll at least get started. The Gemara in Pesachim on Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph tells us that Shisha Dvarim Asa Chizkiyo HaMelech, that Chizkiyo HaMelech did six things, three of which the Chachamim were happy about, three of which the Chachamim were not happy about. And one of the things that he did that the Chachamim were not happy about was Kitzetz Dlasel Shel Heichal V'Shigron LeMelech Ashur, that he cut down the doors of the Heichal and he sent them as a gift to the Melech Ashur. And Rashi writes, Shahayla Levtach BaKadosh Baruch Hu, he should have trusted that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow them to be successful. So it sounds like, because the Navi had guaranteed him that things would be okay. So you don't have to make such a drastic move of taking off pieces of the Beis HaMikdash to make peace with the Melech Ashur if the Navi tells you that things are going to be okay. So what emerges from Rashi, though, is that had it not been for a special Haftacha for a Navi, the Chachamim would have said, yeah, then it's okay to even rip apart pieces of the Beis HaMikdash in order to secure peace, in order to secure that the Jewish lives, that there should be, to save you from Pikuach Nefesh. I don't know how many of you saw Rabbi Eisenman from Passaic, and it was like a 13-page piece that he put out about his experience at the rally and why he wasn't going to go because he's in ill health and it was difficult for him, and then ultimately he was inspired to go. And one of the things that he spoke about was the Taina that how could you attend something where John Hagee is going to speak, where this minister is going to speak. I don't know. I thought he was the best speech. I thought he was, maybe that's the problem. The whole time, my wife is like, "You got to speak more like that. You got to." I'm trying. I'm not really trying. It's impossible, Yeah, like Haman and Hitler. I don't know. I can't do it. But one of the things that Rav Eisenman said was that he quoted from Rav Aaron Cutler, Zichrono Livracha, that at a time when Rav Aaron Cutler was working the Vayelet Tzedek to save people during the Holocaust, he met with Rabbi Stephen Wise of the Reform Movement, and someone criticized him, "How could you meet with a Reform rabbi?" And he said, "If I had to partner with the Pope himself to save the fingernail of one Jewish child, I would do so." So Rabbi Eisman was just wondering, like, whatever happened to that Masorah, that saving the fingernail of one Jewish child is worth all of that. But meaning Pikuach Nefesh is huge. It's Docha Kala Tarukula. And that's L'chora, what emerges from here. Now, retrospectively, in the Land for Peace argument, this seems to be a big argument in favor of Land for Peace, because if you can give up pieces of Eretz Yisrael, granted it's an Isra of Lo Seichanim to give up a piece of Eretz Yisrael, to give up even a small piece of Eretz Yisrael, even your own home, your own anything, any part of Eretz Yisrael to a Nachri, to a non-Jew, is considered Lo Seichanim, is an Isra in the Torah. The word Lo Seichanim, the phrase Lo Seichanim, the Gemara tells us, means three different things. It means that you're not allowed to give Matnas Chinam, a free gift, the gifts that you give around holiday time, to your mailman or whatever, the sanitation workers or co-worker, whatever, are not considered free gifts, because it's you don't want them to leave your garbage all over your lawn, and it's considered to be a gift that has an ongoing relationship associated with it. But there is a technical issue of giving a free gift. There's an issue of lasitin lam chein, that you're not allowed to give chein, which means gratuitous compliments, and there's an issue of That you're not allowed to give a Nachri Chaniya Bekarka. You're not allowed to give them a place in Eretz Yisrael that otherwise we would have owned. It's an issue of Losi Chanim. Okay, but this is Pikuach Nefesh, and Pikuach Nefesh is Docha everything. So Rav Shechter often points out that, and this is critical, Minchas Chinuch writes that the whole din that Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Kol HaTorah Kula assumes Shas Shalom. It assumes that it's at a time of peace. At a time of war, it's pashut that we don't say Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Kol HaTorah Kula, because the very nature of war is that there are casualties in war. That's the very nature of the whole thing. B'derech HaTeva, there's always going to be a sakana to chayalim during war, and therefore we don't say, oh, even if it's a suffix sakana to one chayal, so we should give up everything. We should give up the whole Eretz Yisrael. Then Eretz Yisrael would never be able to keep Eretz Yisrael. David HaMelech would have never been able to fight a war. Now, I think the whole idea of milchama presumes that there's unfortunately going to be some casualties, and that's what the Netziv writes, and that's what the Biskar Rav writes, and the Nachlus, and many others write. It's a davar pashut. Now, Rav Shechter argues further, and this he gets from Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, from a comment that was made by Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, that Medinas Yisrael has been in a matzav shel milchama since 1948 continuously. Meaning one might... Yeah? We'll get to civilians in a second, yeah. So Medinas Yisrael has been in a matzav shel milchama continuously since 1948. Meaning we might think, well, there was 67, and then there was the Yom Kippur War, and but in between, you know, and then... So he said that that's not the case. There's, unfortunately, when we're surrounded by our enemies, we know that the quieter times are times that our enemy is just figuring out when their next attack is going to be. They're plotting when the next time they're going to go after us is. So it's always a matzav shel milchama. When did Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky say this? What was the context of this comment of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky? So it was when Rav Huttner's plane was hijacked. Rav Huttner wasn't the only Jew on the plane. There were a lot of people on the it was two planes that were hijacked by Arab terrorists. And at the time, there were some askanim involved in Chaim Berlin that wanted to go to the State Department and offer millions of dollars to secure Rav Huttner's release. He was a gadol dar, and they, you know, the shaila was, you're not supposed to be poda shavo biyosim ikdei damav. You're not supposed to pay more than the value of a captive in order to redeem him, which is also something that's a very important sugya nowadays, because if you're going to pay more than the value of the captive, then it's just going to encourage them to take more people into captivity. We're very, very happy that Gilad Shalit is home and that he's with his family, but the price was, you know, enormous. It was absolutely, absolutely enormous, and it's something that's hard to see in retrospect that it was a deal that's worth it. Considering all the damage that has already been done and the lives that have already been taken because of the people that were released in that deal, and all the other captives that have that have been taken as a result of that deal. But the halacha is that if there's a value, a monetary value to the captive, so you're not supposed to pay, and that's what it used to be. It used to be that they would take captives for money, for ransom. They weren't taking for release terrorists on the other side. That's the conversation, Rosh Weiss points out, the conversation nowadays of being poda shvuyim, is totally, totally different than the conversation in the sugya and Maseches Gittin. Sugya and Maseches Gittin is they wanted money. So the question is, how much money should you pay? Nowadays, it's an entirely different discussion. It's a pikuach nefesh discussion. It's a melchama discussion. It's an entirely different discussion. But the Mishnah in Gittin says you're not supposed to say Yosem K'dei Damav. However, Tosus writes, if someone is a muflag b'chachma, if someone is an extraordinary Talmud Chacham, then you're allowed to pay Yosem K'dei Damav. So this chevra from Chaim Berlin, some of the balabatim, wanted to put together millions of dollars and to be poda Rav Huttner from captivity. And Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said that you can't do that. He's a muflag b'chachma. He said the whole idea that you're allowed to pay more than he's worth for a muflag b'chachma is only b'shas shalom, if there's not an ongoing war. But b'shas milchama, you're not allowed to do anything to help your enemy in their war effort, meaning anything you do to supply the enemy, to help the enemy, is going to be detrimental to winning the war, and you're not allowed to do any of that. So this is all Shas Milchama, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetzky. Happened to be the State Department said we don't negotiate with terrorists anyway, so it's not going to, they weren't willing to give the money anyway, so it didn't get off the ground. But that was the argument that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetzky made. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetzky said, you're going to tell me that it's not a Shas Milchama? He says, of course it's a Shas Milchama. From the time of Hakamas HaMedina, it's always been a Shas Milchama. So obviously now it's a clear Shas Milchama, but in a Shas Milchama, we have to do whatever we can to win the war. And Rav Shechter quotes a Maharal, where the Maharal writes that includes Rashoim v'chayavim, these are Rav Shechter's words, we are permitted and obligated, Chayavim Tzal, Lahakos va'af larog, to strike and to kill kifi adarush lunatzeich b'mulchama, as much as necessary to win the war. Af achirim may also uma shehim chafim mipesha, even if we're killing people who are innocent civilians. Ukumvor begorayil maral miprag parshas vayishlach, and the maral miprag writes this in parshas vayishlach. We pointed out in the drasha this past Shabbos, where Meir Tversky pointed out that parshas vayishlach, the Ramban tells us, is the basis for how to approach milchama. Right, the Ramban writes that. It's fascinating. The Ramban says that Yaakov Avinu, of course, the Chazal tells us that Yaakov Avinu prepared with three things, right? Tefillah and Doron and Milchama. So we know that we're doing Tefillah. That's what we do each and every day, and we hopefully, we're still saying Avinu Malkeinu, at least twice a week, and we're doing Tehillim after every davening. We know we're doing Tefillah, and we know we're doing Milchama. The IDF is fighting a Milchama. What's Doron? What does Doron mean? So Rav Tversky pointed out the simple translation of Doron is diplomacy. It means that you go and you rally, you call your elected officials. We had a day in yeshiva today where after shir, every rebbe was asked to tell all the boys in yeshiva, here's the phone number of a congressman who's been supportive of Israel, call and say thank you. Because they tally those things. They tally how many calls they get in support and how many calls they get against. And that's Doron. That's part of what we're supposed to do. So the Ramban writes that it's not just that the Yaakov facing Esav had to deal with those three things. The Ramban writes that the reason the Torah tells us about that Parsha is as a limud l'doro, so we should always know how to face our enemies. And then the Ramban quotes a Medrash that traditionally, whenever we had to approach the government and ask for help and for favors and things like that, whenever it was a difficult time, the tradition was they'd chazer over Parshas Vayishlach. They'd review what Yaakov Avinu did. That was always the tradition, that's how we approach it. So on Parshas Vayishlach, the Maral writes, and here's the Lashon the Maral, V'afal gav da amra hatorah ki tikrav el ir lihilachim aleha v'korasa elel l'shalom, that even though the Torah says that when you approach a city, you have to first offer peace to the city, haynu heichi delo asu liYisrael davar, that's only if they hadn't done anything to the Jewish people. Meaning when we were going and conquering Eretz Yisrael the first time, we can't just go in and start killing people to take over Eretz Yisrael. We have to first offer peace, and if they're willing to peacefully go and peacefully live under our jurisdiction, then we're okay with that. Aval heichi da'asu liYisrael davar kagon zeh, sheparts bem lasos lam nevala, but if they've done something terrible to the Jewish people, this is the Lashon of the Maral, aval Gavdulo Asarak Echod Mehem, even if only one member of the other side did something terrible to the Jewish people, Kivan de Michlal Ha'am, who, since he's part of that nation, Kivan Shapartzalem Tchila, since they started the war, Mutarim Likach Nikmasa Mehem, we're allowed to take our vengeance from them. Vachinami Kolam Elchamos Shem Nimtzayim, Kigon Sroris HaMidyanim, all the Melchamos that we find throughout Tanakh. There are many innocent civilians in every war. That's not a chiluk. There are members of that nation that have done bad. We're allowed to fight a war. And that is the nature of war, that innocent civilians will die in the nature of war. Now, we do whatever we can to avoid the death of innocent civilians if we don't have to. We don't just randomly start killing innocent civilians, but to the extent that we can protect our chayalim, and even if it's going to cost innocent civilian lives on the other side. I was in West Hempstead a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, whatever it was, on the Matzai Shabbos, and Rav Shechter was there for Shabbos, and they asked, to what extent we have to protect innocent civilian lives on the other side? And he said, to the extent that it's not going to cost a single chayal his life. Obviously, Rav Shechter does not get to make the military decisions for the state of Israel, nor the diplomatic decisions, we do a lot more than that. You know, we put a lot of chayalim in, thank you so much, in harm's way, in an attempt to save civilian lives. But technically, we don't have to. Meaning, once there's a melchama, by definition, that's what's going to happen. I want to talk though a little bit more about what type of melchama this is. Meaning there are two types of melchama in Judaism. There's what's called melchamas mitzvah, and there's called melchamas harashus. So the phrase melchamas harashus, it's like a funny phrase, no? Melchamas harashus, what does that mean? How do you understand melchamas harashus? Like if you feel like it? Like when you start, right? Are we allowed to just do that? We're allowed to just, you know?
You could do it, but it's not a mitzvah.
Right, meaning like if we feel like it, right? Meaning like, right? Non-defensive war. Okay, so the word rishus actually comes from the idea that you need to be notel rishus from the Sanhedrin Agadol, meaning that in order to go out to Muhammad, they first needed to be notel rishus from the Beis Nagadol. As opposed to Muhammad's mitzvah, you don't need rishus. You have a similar parallel for those doing Mishnah Yomi in Meseches Yevamos about a woman who gets remarried b'rishus Beis Din versus a woman who gets remarried shelo b'rishus Beis Din. So like it sounds like shelo b'rishus Beis Din is worse, right? Like how is she allowed to get remarried? Shelo b'rishus Beis Din means there are two edim. You don't need a Beis Din to tell you that if there are two edim, the husband is dead, that she's allowed to get remarried. B'rishus Beis Din means that it's a little more iffy, so you need to make sure there's only one aid that told you the husband is dead. So you really need rishus from a Beis Din to go forward with your life and to get remarried. So we also Mechamas Rishus means it's a little more iffy. You know, we're deciding to expand the borders of Eretz Yisrael. If you look in the Navi describes the borders of Yerushalayim are much, much larger than they are now, what they're going to be. The Harabais, much, much larger than it is now. It's going to be a totally different, the whole layout is going to be entirely different. We're going to have much, much more space. So that's Rishus. Rishus, we're trying to expand, and therefore, since it's a little more iffy, the morality of it is a little more iffy, we need Rishus from the Beis Nagadol. And because that's what Rishus means, so Rav Shechter makes the very simple argument, whenever any other country fights a war, let's say, Ukraine and Russia, or any other war that ever happens between two other countries, the American Civil War, anything, any other country fights a war, what is that? Is that a melchemes harashus, or is that a melchemes mitzvah? So he says that it can't be a melchemes harashus, because the word rashus means rashus from the Beis Nagadol. They don't have a Beis Nagadol to go to. So every other war is pretty much viewed, at least on one side of it, as a melchemes mitzvah, meaning if there's an aggressor, then the person who's being, the country, sorry, that's being attacked, has a mitzvah to defend itself. It becomes a melchemes mitzvah to defend itself. And that's true in any instance where a country is attacked. When a country is under attack, it becomes a mitzvah for that country to defend itself, and that war takes on the status of melchemes mitzvah. You know, I always wondered the concept that by a melchemes mitzvah, the Mishnah says, afilu kala mechupasa, that everyone goes to melchemes mitzvah. Chasam mechupasa, kala mechupasa, everyone goes out. If you've been to Israel in the last few weeks, you get it. Meaning, the Rishonim explain, well, what's the kala going to do? The kala mechupasa, she's going to be able to fight. They didn't used to have women, in combat units. So what does that mean that the kala is gonna fight? So the Rishonim explained. No, it means that she's gonna help prepare the food for the soldiers. She's gonna help in other ways, provide whatever needs that they have and other things. That everyone's gonna be involved in the war effort in some way or another. If you've been to Eretz Yisrael in the last since this war broke out, every single person in the country is involved in this war effort. Some are hosting displaced families. Some are, sending things to Chayalim. You know, it's the videos you see online are like a tiny drop in the bucket of what's actually happening. It's not just American rabbis barbecuing and singing "Am Yisrael Chai" with a bunch of soldiers. Like there's so much going on in terms of everyone being involved. In fact, it begs the question: what our role in a milchemes mitzvah is? Meaning, if it's a milchemes mitzvah, l'chora we're all obligated to join in the war effort. But again, joining the war effort doesn't necessarily mean in a fighting role. You know, we're very proud that we have doctors from our shul that have been there and have been helping with their expertise in the war effort. And we have to do whatever we can, whether not only with tefillah, but certainly with tefillah, certainly with Talmud Torah, certainly with providing physical things that monetary help that we can. It's an interesting shaila. I wanted to talk to Rav Shechter about this. I keep getting the shaila. Someone says, look, I can go to Eretz Yisrael, but the tickets are very expensive right now. There's only one airline flying. And I can go and show the support and chizik and this and go on one of these missions. Or I could use all that money and donate it, what's the better thing to do? But it's a cheshbon, meaning the cheshbon assumes that I should be doing something, that I need to be doing something. As long as there's a milchemes mitzvah going on, I need to be involved in the milchemes mitzvah. So that's something that we have to realize, that the matzav is one of a milchemes mitzvah. In general, I'm going to skip the part of the piece where Rav Shechter goes through how do we determine what's a winning war versus a losing war, because it's irrelevant to our current situation. Meaning the whole discussion he has is it worth the cost of the war? There's no doubt that this war, meaning everyone in Israel and Jews the world over, want this war. There's a reason why, who was it? One of the congressmen, I think, said, maybe it was at the rally, that said that not everyone who wants a ceasefire it was Richie Torres that said, yeah, not everyone who wants a ceasefire is an anti-Semite, but every anti-Semite wants a ceasefire. Mm-hmm. Meaning, there's a reason why that those who want to see security for Eretz Yisrael want this war to continue, because we need to see it through. This is another point that Rav Shechter points out in this piece. Later on in the piece, I'm skipping around a little bit, he talks about the musag, the concept, the bitoy of aschalta de geula, the idea that we refer to something as the beginning of geula. Where does that come from? Meaning, who gives? A lot of times, people are bothered by that phrase. Who gives us the audacity to say what is and isn't the aschalta de geula? What is and isn't the beginning of geula? So he says it's really a Gemara in Megillah that milchama is aschalta de geula, that wars are aschalta de geula, and particularly the Chassam Sofer thinks even wars that don't involve the Jewish people are aschalta de geula, meaning just having the world play out as it's supposed to play out is a march toward geula. And when every war, whatever, because you have that tiara besichon, you have the in Chumash, that there are wars that had to play out in order that certain people should be in place in certain locations, so that the Jewish people will fight this nation and not the other nation. Meaning everything has some sort of effect. And as we saw, the Russian-Ukraine war, what does that have to do with Eretz Yisrael? Apparently everything, right? Meaning other wars that happen in the world are also aschalta de geula, because it's all part of the story as history unfolds itself. So who cares that something is aschalta de geula? Meaning one might say, you want to call it aschalta de geula, you don't want to call it aschalta de geula, we'll see what happens. I don't know, in retrospect, we'll know if it was aschalta de geula or not. So Rav Shechter points out two nafkaminas in something being aschalta de geula. He points out that there's a nesivus in Megillah Starim, which is his commentary, Megillah Esther, who says that you're allowed to be kovea yom tov for something that is aschalta de geula, for something that is l'chora aschalta de geula. We're not allowed to make new yom tovim b'zman hazeh. But the Megillah's tainus, we got rid of a lot of the old yom tovim that people made for various things. We're certainly not allowed to make new yom tovim b'zman hazeh. But if something seems to be a schalta de gula, you're allowed to be kovea yomtov, and that's why they were allowed to be kovea purim. Right? It was a shaila who told them that they were allowed to make a new yomtov called purim. So the Nesivus argues because it seemed they were wrong, but it seemed that that was the schalta de gula. And if it was a schalta de gula, something that seems like a schalta de gula, you're allowed to be kovea yomtov for. So okay, we're not going to get into that part of the piece where he then argues that l'chora you're allowed to establish a yomtov of Yom Ha'atzmaut because it's l'chora. It seems to be aschalta de geula, but the other nafkamina he has, he quotes ironically from the Minchas Aluzer, who is not from the biggest Zionists. He made the Satmar Rebbe look like a moderate. So the Mincha Saluzu, the Munkacher, writes that you're not allowed to daven that a war that's a Schalta de Gula should stop prematurely, because you're pushing off the Geula. Meaning, we take Geula very seriously. We view the concept, and you know, one of the hardest of the animamins to fulfill is achak lo b'chol yom sheyava, is that we're waiting and hoping. All the other animamins are just things that you believe. That's an animamin. That it's not just I believe that Moshe Rabbeinu is the Adon HaNaviim, and that the entire Torah is the Torah that it was, and that Kodesh Baruch Hu runs the world, and all the other animamins, and scharvon, all the other animamins are things that I believe happen. This is something that I have to actually yearn for, that I hope for. I don't know what I mentioned where, so I don't know how many of these things you've heard from me. But I said to Rav Shach, the night Motzai Simchas Torah, I got a message from Rabbi Isaac Rice, and he said, "I just drove Rav Shachter home. Rav Shachter was by Shai for Yantiv. I just drove Rav Shachter home. Here are some of the things he shared with me, some perspectives about the Melchama." And there were a lot of different things. And one of them he said, and here are the things that should not be repeated. So one of the things he said should not be repeated is that Rav Shachter said that it seems to me that this fits the description in the Nevi'im of Melchemes Gog Magog, which is the ultimate war at the end of days. So he said, don't repeat that. So about an hour later, Rav Shachter got on a Zoom with about 1,000 people and said, it seems to me that this is Melchemes Gog Magog. You can tell me not to repeat it. You can't tell him not to repeat it. He'll repeat it whenever he wants to repeat it. So I pushed him on that a little bit after. I said, is that like a healthy thing to say? That like, meaning, do we really, meaning every time we've there have been people who've interpreted events in history to say, oh, this must be the Gula. It's usually led to disaster, because it got people's hopes up, and then when it didn't happen, it's it just shattered people's emunah. You know, I think there was Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in Toronto or something, where a rabbi in Toronto told all the non-religious storekeepers, if you close your store for two Shabbosos, Mashiach is going to come. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky went around to every store and said, you can close your store for two Shabbosos, Mashiach is still not going to come. Mm-hmm. And they said, why would you do that to them? Why would you, you know, why would you tell them to? He said, they may not believe in anything, but at least they believe in Mashiach. You're going to take away that from them, their belief in Mashiach, by making these promises that you can't deliver on? So I asked Rashach, is that really like a healthy thing to, I didn't really ask, someone else asked, but I was there. That is this really a healthy thing to say? That, that this is the Melchemes Gog Magog? He said, I'm not saying it is Melchemes Gog Magog. He said, I'm saying that it fits the description. And every day you're supposed to wake up and think that there's a 50-50 chance the Mashiach is going to come. That's what Achak Lo B'Chol Yom Sheyava means. That every morning when you wake up, you assume that it's a 50-50 chance. So you have to interpret all the world events as being part of that 50-50 chance that Mashiach will come. I was thinking, like, the level of emunah, that to actually wake up every morning and think, like, meaning, you woke up this morning, when you thought about like where you're going to be for Shabbos, where you're going to, you know, which minyan you're going to daven at tomorrow morning, were you thinking of like in the Beis Hamikdash, like meaning what will we, you know, do we actually live like that? It's such a high level of emunah to actually live with the idea that there's a 50-50 chance. But the Minchas Aluzer is saying that when a melchama is a schalta de gula, you can't daven for it to end prematurely. Because gula is something we take seriously, something we hope for, it's something we yearn for, it's one of the ikari emunah to yearn for, and therefore we can't push it off. This is other nafkaminas. The Gemara says, you know, the halacha is that there's a mitzvah to have children. It's the first mitzvah in the Torah, mitzvah puruvu. So the mitzvah puruvu, technically, the Mishnah Masechta Yevamah says, is fulfilled by having one boy, one girl, having a son and a daughter. So why do Jewish families typically try to have more than one son and one daughter? So there are a couple of reasons. So the Gemara says that there's an additional mitzvah chasidus of Beboker Zorah Zorach L'Erev Al Tanich Yadecha, that even if you have children when you're young, you should have children still when you're a little bit older, because you don't know who's going to give you the most nachas. So Binyamin, good job. So you should keep having children when you're older. But then there's another midas chasid, another element that the Gemara highlights. The Gemara says, Ein ben David ba at sheichla kala neshama shabaguf. that Mashiach comes when all the neshamos are emptied out of Shemayim, that every neshama you bring into the world is a step closer to Mashiach. So Jews traditionally try to have large families because part of it is because that's your nachas in life, but a lot of it is also that Ein Ben David Ba, Shiach L'Kal Hashem Shem Guf, that we're marching toward Mashiach. Should I share your idea, Binyamin? As soon as the war broke out, Binyamin called me and he said, Rabbi, you need to make a push that everyone should have one more child. Take it up with him. That was okay. But I assume that's where he was coming from, that Ein Ben David Ba, Shiach L'Kal Hashem Shem Guf, that Mashiach is going to come. When we have all, so we have to march toward Mashiach, and part of that march toward Mashiach is that we daven that the wars should not end. Should not end prematurely. So he has. I didn't even make it through half of the piece, but I want to like divert a little bit and talk about like a little bit of a do now, and it's something that I've mentioned before. But as I've been doing it, it's been impacting me. So I'm going to make another pitch again for how one can prepare or participate in the war effort on a spiritual level, because it is important to realize that. Sometimes when our hashkafa is under attack or we feel that it's being pushed back against by people who have different hashkafos, so, let's say if there was, not talking about anything specifically, but let's say someone were to say that diplomacy is a waste of time and sending things to chayalim is a waste of time. All you need to do is daven and learn, daven and learn, daven and learn, daven and learn, and that's what's going to bring, that's what's going to bring everything. So we sometimes have a tendency because of that, incorrect worldview, when we fight back against it, to highlight how important diplomacy is and how important supporting the chayalim and writing letters and this and that and doing everything that we can. And we run the risk when we, in our fighting back, to forget how important tefillah and Torah is also, meaning to forget that tefillah, doron, melchama, that they're all three critical parts. And ani mam be'emunah shleima, the first of the Ikari Emunah, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the entire world, and any Yeshua only comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that we have a chiyuv hishtadlus, but the Yeshua doesn't come from hishtadlus, it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I wanted to highlight, although, again, I think we have to make an additional push for fundraising and an additional push for continuing to keep the pedal to the metal and doing everything that we can to help in a practical way, in a physical way, in a way that we could see with our, with our Gashmi eyes. But I wanted to make an additional push on a spiritual level. And whenever I do make a push on the spiritual level, I really try to keep it very mild. Very, very moderate, something easy, something that's not difficult to implement in our daily lives. A little bit of background. In advance of going to war, the Chumash tells us how a Jewish army gets prepared for war. There are rules and regulations about what we're allowed to do during war, some crazy things that we're allowed to do, like Yifas Tohar, and things that we're not allowed to do during war, like Avodah Zarah and things like that from the enemy nations that you might learn and things of that nature. It doesn't give us a lot in terms of military strategy. Right? The Chumash doesn't tell us much about military. Navi does. In Navi it does. I think Rabbi Alan Schwartz's master's thesis was on military strategy one was military strategy in Tanakh, in Nevi'im Rishonim, I think, and the other was on suicide in Tanakh. Both fascinating topics, both plenty of source material on both topics. But anyway, the Torah doesn't tell us so much about military strategy, but it tells us a lot about spiritual strategy, meaning the people who are sent home, according to one opinion of Chazal, why are they? What does it mean, Yarei v'racha levav? It means Yarei me avera shabiyadam, that they were afraid because of averus. Meaning a soldier has to be very brave. A soldier can't be afraid. My sister was telling me that there was a kid from her neighborhood who is in an elite unit, and again, elite just means very dangerous. When a kid from her neighborhood is in an elite unit, it means that he was not following his family's, what Dr. Palkovitz calls the family bumper sticker, right? Meaning she's from Ramat Eshkol, the kids generally don't go to the army. But she says, so all my sister's kids were coming from school, telling them, the siblings of this kid were telling these stories. So it was on October 7th, and he was on one of the first military helicopters to arrive. And they got there, 70 people got out of the helicopter, these huge military helicopters. 70 soldiers got out, and there was a guy, a police officer, whose leg was came out blown off, who was crawling out toward them saying, don't go in to whatever kibbutz it was, don't go in there. You're only 70 people, you have no idea what's going on. Meaning they didn't even realize that it was thousands of people. And the commander turned to his soldiers and he said, no one has to go in, but I'm going in, and anyone who wants to can come in with me. Meaning it's essentially going into face a very high likelihood of getting killed, but in the process of killing a lot of hopefully killing a lot of terrorists and eliminating a lot of the enemy. And of the 70, 70 went in. 70 went in. I mean, the level of bravery. So this young man went in and he killed a lot of people that day, and because there apparently wherever they were there was a tunnel or more. Terrorists kept on coming through, so they were coming out like mice. Like you couldn't. So he killed a lot of terrorists that day. At one point, he was saved by a miracle. At one point, there were two terrorists. He shot one. The other one saw where he was shooting from, took a grenade, and threw the grenade at him. The kid said, "Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad," and the grenade hit a rock, bounced right back at the terrorist, and blew him up. And the kid got out. So he obviously had a pretty traumatic day, and he came back 3 days later. He said, "I need to go back. I need to fight again." Meaning the yarei v'rach alevav is something that's almost not in the vocabulary of these heroic soldiers. But yarei v'rach alevav, the Gemara says, means one opinion of Chazal at least, yarei me'averos shebiyadam, that they're afraid that they did averos, that therefore they won't be zocha to be successful. So it could be a very highly decorated officer from an elite unit who's critical to the war effort, but if he's a sinner, then the Torah says he shouldn't go. So Rashi quotes a Gemara in Sota that says, not just any avera. Rashi writes, ki seitzi l'melcham aleivachav riso sos v'rachav amrav mimcha vayu b'char v'chom ele melchama v'nigash ha-koin v'daber olam v'amar aleim shema yisrael atem krov mayom l'melchama aleivachem al, you know, al yirach levavchem. So Rashi says, al yirach levavchem afilu ein b'chem zuchus el kriya shema b'lvad kedai atem sheyoshia eschem. That if you have the zuchus of kriya shema, then you're worthy of being saved and you should go and fight the war. Which is remarkable, because this story of this young man who obviously was coming from where he was coming. Many of our chayalim, Baruch Hashem, are very big yirei shemayim and very from. And coming from where this kid was coming from, he was only in the army because he wasn't from anymore. Meaning it was obvious that he was. But he knew to say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, in what he thought was his last moments. And the zchus of kriya shema, that's enough for a person to be saved. But it's so interesting that that's the mitzvah that's highlighted. That kriya shema is the mitzvah that's highlighted. You know, the entirety of Torah Sheval Peh begins with the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi got to choose however he wanted to arrange the Torah Sheval Peh, right? The text of Torah Sheval Peh is the Mishnayos, and it begins with Kriya Shema. Kriya Shema Shel Arvis, not even Kriya Shema Shel Shachris. So there's something about Kriya Shema that it's the foundation, and that Kriya Shema is the zuchus that saves us from war. Not only that, there's a minhag Yisrael that on the night of before Bris Milah, that they get together with the baby, and they say Shema with the baby. The baby can't say, I mean, can you imagine how freaked out you'd be if the baby would be like, yeah, Shema Yisrael, Shema Yisrael, Shema. But they say Shema with the baby, so to speak. That Shema is sort of like the first thing that the baby needs before he's nichnas l'briso shel Avram Avinu. So the Baal HaTanya writes in Perek Yud Ches of Likutei Amarim, he talks about countless Jewish people throughout history who he refers to as Kalei Hadas, which means people are very far from any spiritual or intellectual achievement in Torah, and yet have been willing to give their lives al Kiddush Hashem, and have become kedoshim. We all know the famous line from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach when he was asked about traveling great distances to go to Kivrei Tzadikim, where Rav Shlomo Zalman said, "When I want to go to Kivrei Tzadikim, I go to Har Herzl." because that's Kivrei Tzadikim, and it's much closer by. Why would you go? And this is the greatest Tzadikim, because people who give their lives, Al Kiddush Hashem, that's Kivrei Tzadikim. But many of those people didn't believe in anything. They didn't keep anything, believe in anything, they never learned Torah. So Baal HaTanya says, so where does that come from? That a person is going to give their lives for Kiddush Hashem if they don't believe in anything. How could it be that people who can't resist the most minor temptation for sin, and yet when it comes to the most fundamental human instinct of self-preservation, are willing to give that up for Klal Yisrael? So the Baal HaTanya writes, I'm going to read it in his Lashon, because his Lashon is beautiful. El she'inyin hu, ki l'kol ish Yisrael. The idea is that every Jewish person, afilu akal shebekalim, even the most insignificant spiritually, I don't know how to translate kal shebekalim exactly, the lowest people, temuna bepnimius libo avamusteres l'Hashem, is hidden deep in his heart a hidden love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, she lemala min haseichel v'das, that goes beyond any intellectual comprehension or understanding. Ki ein tam ba'avazu, there's no logical reason or explanation for this ava, elehi teva mutba b'kol echad miYisrael Yerusha mei avos hakadoshim. It's inherent in the nature of every Jew, it's Yerusha from our holy forefathers. Umasha anurom harbe miYisrael asher einu mekaimim mitzvah Hashem chas v'shalom. The fact that we see many people who chas v'shalom do not observe the mitzvahs of Hashem, it's because this ava is in a sleeping state. It's in a hidden state. The Russia covers this ava in the sackcloth of all the nonsense of this world, of all the silly things that we fill our time with. But when it comes down to it, a nisayon of kfirah b'Hashem, azay misoreres avazu shemusteres bekirbo mishenasa amuka v'tisparitz b'shalheves eish kodesh, then this ava comes out and it rips through, you know, all of that those coverings from the depth, and it breaks right through with this burning fire. Asher mayim rabim lo yuchlu lichbos es avasul Hashem, that all the water in the world can't extinguish this great ava for Hashem. Va'afilu kalei adas yu mukhanim limsor es nafsham al kedushas Hashem, that even kalei adas are willing to give up their lives for kedushas Hashem. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing people who are willing to give their lives. Now, people who give into every yetzer hara in the world, people willing to give their lives al kedushas Hashem. And we have to realize that that comes from a very, very holy place. The deepest, holiest place, says the Baal HaTanya. You know, there are some people that are running around saying, secular Zionism is the enemy and this and that. And, you know, if you sing HaTikva, then you're not Bikaras or whatever. You know, like Rav Shachter pointed out the other day, secular Zionism is dead. There's no such thing as secular Zionism anymore. The real secular Zionists all leave Eretz. So they're in Northern California and Florida and wherever. I mean, they have nothing to do with Israel. Well, the Zionism that you see in Eretz Yisrael is not secular Zionism. It's all religious Zionism. Not everyone who practices it is religious yet, you know, in the conventional sense. But everything that they're fighting for comes from a religious place. Why is it that we can't make tzitzis fast enough for the soldiers? Why is it that we can't buy tefillin fast enough for the soldiers that want it? People keep nothing. It's because it's not coming from a secular place. It's coming from the ava musuteres that a person has, that every Jew has. And that's how the Tanya explains the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. It's the key to success for a Jew. When we reinforce our mitzvah of Kriya Shema, means that no matter where I am in life, no matter who I am, I'm willing to be Moser Nefesh. I'm being Makabel Ol Malch Shemaim. And this is, again, it's a point I've made before, but I'm going to make it again right now, that it's in Halacha. Rav Reisman pointed out that the Chayyadim says it, Rav Tversky pointed out it's Tshuvas HaRashba, and the Bach writes it's in Halacha, that when a person is Makabel Ol Malch Shemaim, when you say Shemaim Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, there are a bunch of things you're supposed to think about. One of them is that you're doing a mitzvah d'oraisa, because mitzvah shrinks kavana. Another is that you're being Makabel Ol Malch Shemaim. But what does it mean to be Makabel Ol Malch Shemaim? It doesn't mean I'm not an atheist. That's not all it means. That would be such a low level of Kabbalah Ol Malch Shemaim, that I'm not an atheist. No, Kabbalah Ol Malch Shemaim means I believe this so strongly that I'm willing to die for it. that I believe in God so strongly that I'm willing to die for him. That's Kabbalah Sol Malach Shemayim. So now you understand why Kriyat Shema plays such a critical role. Yeah, the soldier has the zechus of Kriyat Shema. It means that he has that Ava Musteris that's inside of him, that's ready to break out. That's all he needs to have the zechus, to have a Yeshua. The first thing we want a child to know before he's Moser Damo the next day in Briso Shel Avram Avinu is that you have Kriyat Shema, is that you have this idea of being Makabal Al Malch Shemayim, that you're willing to die for it. So again, my little pitch is that we know people who actually are being, everyone in this room probably knows people who are actually putting their lives on the line for the protection of Klal Yisrael. I just spoke in Ramat Shilo 2 weeks ago in Leif HaTorah, next door to Yeshivas Leif HaTorah. And I got a voice note from someone this week that one of the families that were there just lost their son in battle. That he was in the same group as Rabbi Rosner's son and a few other, and there were four of them. There was a house in Gaza that was supposed to be empty. This boy said, I'll go in first, and he went in first. And we all know people, we've all spoken to people, we all know people that are actually putting their lives on the line, that are actually being Moser Nefesh. So I think just a small Kabbalah for our spiritual participation in the war effort is just, you know, I put a little post-it note in my sitter to remind me. Before you say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, think that I'm being Mekabel Ol Malach Shemayim to such an extent that the Ava Mustara Shebelibi is willing to be Moser Nafsho. And through that, that's what ultimately binds all of Klal Yisrael together. And I know I was supposed to say something more cheerful, and I was supposed to uplift everyone, and I just can't do it. I try. I just can't do it. But we should be Zocha through all three ways, through Tefillah and Doron and Melchama, to see the ultimate Yeshua. The war should come, should not end quickly. It should end when it's supposed to end, and in the way that it's supposed to end, so that we should be zocha to the final Yeshua, where we won't have to fight any more wars. Lo yisagoy el goy cherev, v'lo yilmedu od milchama.